unable, Joe. Chichako statistics, Magizzi Do Dam. I come from Shawanaga First Nation. My traditional name, Chichakos, translates to he who understands the people. And when I was given that name, then I understood why I was doing the work that I've been doing, the spiritual work. My English name, or a lot of people like to refer to it as the government name, is Vince Paywis. And so I'm here today to share with you what little bit I know about our spirituality and our culture. I've been walking this way for a very long time, and learning the teachings. The medicine wheel that has been provided for you in the booklet and the one that's on the floor here are teaching tools that we have developed in order to make the teachings more easier to learn. When I was being taught the teachings by the elders a long time ago, I had to sit around in a circle around a fire and listen to the elders talk and tell their stories. And they would do the teachings like the five rascals or the seven grandfather teachings, and they would do them verbally to us. And so it took me a long, long time to understand what those teachings were, what they meant, and how to practice them in my life. And so I am a recovering alcoholic. Been sober now for 3 years. And I sobered up going to a treatment center, and then I followed a structured Alcoholics Anonymous program for 5 years, and then I was introduced to the elders who taught me about our spirituality and our culture and our ceremonies. And so I'm very grateful that I am where I am today. I'm very grateful that I had a teacher that taught me for 16 years about our spirituality and our culture. Hello? He told me he was going to shut me off. He didn't want to listen to me. I had a teacher that taught me for 16 years about our spirituality and our culture, and I made the mistake one day. He was in his 90s when he was teaching me, and towards the end, and I made the mistake one day of asking him, how old do you think I'm going to live to be? And he said, he leaned over on the edge of his bed, and I was sitting on a chair across from him, and he looked at me, and he said, you're going to live to be older. By the time that you get to be 65, and so you're going to work for the rest of the world. And so that's not something you really want to hear. I took it for the value of so I've managed to be able to live this far. Too many things that he told me came true in reality in life. And so I do believe that I'm going to be working for the rest of my life. During my time, I incorporated a company called White Buffalo Road Healing Lodge. It's a non-profit charitable organization, and we provide cultural programs and teachings for indigenous kids that are coming out of open and closed custody. We work also in the provincial jail system. I worked as a Native liaison for 20-some years, providing Native services. One of the things that I found really early in my career at working in the jails was when I put out the medicine wheel, very few of our native people knew anything about their spirituality, their culture, the teachings. Very few spoke the language. Very few knew about the ceremonies. And that was a result of what happened with residential school, the effects of residential school. And the 60 scoop, where all the young people were adopted out to non-native families. And so when I started, I had a panel of elders that I worked with that guided me. They were the ones that told me I needed to bring the teachings, bring the ceremonies, and bring the elders in to help people. And so that's how White Buffalo Road Healing Lodge started up. That White Buffalo is very significant to our people, and it's a prophecy that has come true. Around 35 years ago, there was a white buffalo calf that was born in South Dakota, and that was a turning point for Indigenous people, that no longer did we have to hide our spirituality and our culture and our ceremonies. We could practice openly. And because if I was caught in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, if I was caught teaching you these teachings, I would have been arrested and thrown in jail, and all my spiritual items would have been destroyed, because virtually what they were trying to do was wipe out our spirituality and our culture. The Canadian government passed laws that forbid us from practicing our ceremonies. And so if we were caught doing that, we were punished for it and jailed for it, and a lot of different things that happened. And so when I usually start, I usually start with the medicine wheel teaching. If you go to the first page of those teachings, you will see that these teachings here are what we call the five rascals. It has the medicines on them, and it has the animals that sit in the four directions. I want to start with the medicine wheel with the four colors that sit in those directions. The yellow represents the yellow race in the east, red race in the south, black race in the west, and white race in the north. And before contact was the only time when you could honestly say that the Indigenous people who are living here were 100% Indigenous. But through relationships and marriages over the generations, we have become mixed, as have most of the people here in Canada. So the yellow race, the red race, the black race, and the white race. And in our culture, we look at who we are and where we come from. And I come from the Indigenous background, so I come from the Red Nation. My mother and father were part white, so I come also from the white nation. So I come of mixed ancestry. And they talked about truth and reconciliation and things, how to fix that. And I always teach that we need to know who we are and where we come from and who is in our family tree. Because you can't look at somebody today and just look at them and say, oh, you come from the Red Nation, or you come from the Black Nation, the White Nation, or the White or the Yellow Nation, because of those mixed marriages and relationships that have happened in the past. So I want to go on further to the medicines. The medicine that sits in the east, in the yellow section, is tobacco. And in my pocket here somewhere, I have a little tobacco tie that was presented to me by Karen. And what is in here is a small quantity of tobacco. So if you want to speak to a spiritual person or if you want to speak to an elder, you take some tobacco and you present it to that individual, whether it's a male or a female elder. You take tobacco and you offer it to them. And once they accept the tobacco, and I have to admit, today Karen was right at the door as soon as I walked in. She knew the teaching, and she knew once I took the tobacco, then I couldn't leave. So if you ever want to speak to a spiritual person or an elder, that's what you do. You take some tobacco to them and offer it to them. Now, tobacco is our first sacred medicine that sits in the East. Tobacco was meant to be used for an offering for anything that we take from the land, whether it's a tree, a plant, a flower, a fish from the water, or birds from the air. Anything that we take from Mother Earth, we're to offer tobacco for. That's what tobacco was meant to be used for. The other thing tobacco was meant to be used for is to pray to God or the Creator. And we take that tobacco and we hold it in our left hand because our left hand is the closest to our heart. Everything we do and say, we want it to come from our heart. And so a lot of times I pray for a lot of different people. I pray every day. I get up in the morning and I pray. At the end of the day, I give thanks for the day. And sometimes what has happened over the generations is we have forgot to give thanks for everything that we get. When we get food or we get water or whatever we get or whatever is given to us, we forget to say thank you for those things. So tobacco is that first medicine that sits in the East. In the South is cedar. Everybody knows what a cedar tree looks like. For our people, cedar is for purification. If you boiled a handful of cedar in a pot in your kitchen stove, after a while it boils, the aroma of the cedar will go throughout your house. It'll cleanse and purify the air. If you took a glass of that cedar tea and you drank it, if you had a sore throat or a cold, it would help you with that sore throat or cold. If you drank 4 or 5 glasses of that cedar tea, what it does is it flushes out your organs in your system. And our people, our elders a long time ago were very smart because way back then there wasn't too many doctors. And they knew that if we cleansed out on a regular basis, we wouldn't get a lot of the sicknesses and stuff. And so the cedar is for purification and for balance. Balance, I use the theory that in the teachings that if you look at a cedar tree, when the wind blows, it'll blow over and then it'll come back straight. It'll blow over, come back straight. And so the roots have good balance. And with all the things that we've lost in our culture and spirituality, our roots became weak, and that's why indigenous people became weak. And so what we're trying to do now is to rebuild those roots so that they become stronger and we're able to stand up and learn how to speak and learn how to be proud of our culture and spirituality. So the medicine that was in the West is sage, and some of you had the opportunity to smudge outside with me, and that sage is a medicine to take away negativity. The medicine that sits in the North is sweetgrass. Sweetgrass are single blades of grass that are picked. A single blade of grass is really weak. But when you take several strands of that grass and you braid it into a braid, it becomes very strong. And when you light that sweet grass and you smudge with it, you're doing that to heal your mind, your body, and your spirit.
So those are four sacred medicines that we utilize in our ceremonies and our healing practices. And so they are very sacred to us. The tobacco, the cedar, the sage, the sweetgrass. Somebody asked me where I picked the sage. I guess they were curious, and we go to Manitoba and Saskatchewan, Alberta, once a year to pick the medicine because it grows in abundance over there, and so it's a long trip. So in each direction, also we have four animals, and the animal that sits in the east is the eagle. And the eagle, for me, I didn't know this at, when I started my journey of recovery, but the eagle came the day that I was leaving a treatment center. And up to that point, I didn't believe in the church. I didn't believe in God. I didn't believe in anybody. And so this counselor that I had kept every day, he would say, "Do you believe in anything yet? Do you believe in anything yet?" And I said, "So what if happens if I don't believe in something?" And he said, "You're going to fall back down on your face when you get out, and you'll probably relapse." And so the last day that I came, that I was there, when he asked me that question, an eagle came and circled and came down, and it flew across from the east to the west, and I was standing on the deck, and the counselor was watching me, and I said, "There, I'll believe in that bird." I had no idea that later on, 5 years later, when I started to sit around with the elders, they told me that I came from the Eagle Clan, and that bird was there to protect me. And so the teaching that they gave me on the eagle was that the eagle is the bird that flies the highest. If you watch an eagle fly, it'll go completely right out of sight. And they said that if the eagle flies completely right out of sight, then it can touch God or the Creator. And so when I heard that story, I said, that's really powerful. And I said, if it's true, then receiving something from the eagle is like getting a gift from God. And so in our culture, the eagle feather is the highest gift you can receive in a community for the work that you do, the spiritual work that you do. And so an elder came one day and he gave me the eagle feather. And when I held that feather, I could feel the strength from that eagle when it soared. And so I held it, and so the longer I held it, the more strength that I seemed to draw from that eagle. And there was a time when I couldn't stand up and speak in front of large crowds. And I used to look down. I was ashamed of who I was. I wasn't proud of where I was. And when the feather came, like I say, it was like a gift from God. And so it was part of a healing tool that I carry. And so they explained that line that goes down the center of the feather is the path of life. And I call it the red road, because I'm living the red road, alcohol and drug free. And so 23 years, I walked from when I was a baby to 23 years old, I lived alcohol and drug free. From 24 to 31 is when I abused myself and lived utilizing alcohol. And then I woke up one day tired of being sick, and I stopped drinking through going to treatment. And I never considered myself an alcoholic, even though I drank every day. It's amazing how people come in and out of your life, and they come in and out of your life for a reason. Nothing happens for a coincidence. There was a 62, a 64, and a 66-year-old man that were at that treatment when I was there. There were seven of us. And seven is very significant for our people. again, it goes back to those seven grandfather teachings. But this 66-year-old man, he didn't get up. He didn't follow the rules of the treatment center, and so they discharged him. Before they discharged him, I asked if I could talk to him. I thought I could convince him to have a shower and attend the circles and stuff that we were doing. And I wasn't able to do that, but what he told me was, he said, "I'm 66 years old. I'm going to die an alcoholic." And he was an alcoholic that drank out of brown paper bags in the park. And that was my misconception of what an alcoholic was. And so he said, "I'm going to die an alcoholic." But he said, you're only 30 years old. You have a chance to change if you listen to them here. And you have you'll have a chance that someday you're going to help a lot of people. Your people," he said. "Indigenous people." And so he got up and he walked out the door. And the philosophy of the treatment said that when you walk out the door slams shut. In order to get back in the door, you got to go through a whole process again, applying and stuff. And so I got up to go leave, and something stopped me at the door. There was something blocking me from going out the door. And I turned around and started to work on myself. And I've been working on myself ever since. And sitting down and meeting with the elders and learning all about who I was and where I come from and what these ceremonies are about and what these teachings are about. So the eagle for us is very important. In the south is the turtle. That turtle brings us teachings from the land and teachings from the water. The teachings from the water are the ones that are most important, because without water we would never survive. When the children come into the world, they come in through some water. And they need water for the rest of the time they're on Mother Earth. At one time when I was a young boy, I used to drink the water out of the rivers, the lake, the streams, wherever the water flowed. But because of man, it's become so polluted that it's unsafe to drink. Even the fish have become poisoned with mercury. And so water is very precious. And a lot of our First Nations communities have a water problem where there's not, it's a boiled water advisory where it's unsafe to drink the water. And so I always tell the young people that they ask me, "Well, why are you telling us that?" And I said, "Well, you have a lifetime ahead of you to live on Mother Earth, and you're going to need water." The animal that sits in the west is the buffalo. Buffalo at one time was the main provider for our people. Again, the story around the white buffalo was I went up on what they call a fasting ceremony. I went up on a high hill and I sat there for 4 days without food or water. And what I was looking for was spiritual guidance from God or the Creator on what my purpose in life was. And so on the third day, on the first day I had no problem because I had drank a lot of water. On the second day I started to get a little more uncomfortable because I was getting less water. And by the time the third day, I was completely dry and stopped going to the washroom. And I started to pray on the third day that I make it to the end of the fourth day, because I knew the elder was going to come and give me. Each day that I was up on that mountain, the elder came each day to check on me to see if I was healthy enough to stay for the 4 days. On the third day, I had a dream, and the dream that I had was of a white buffalo. And when the elder came, I was really scared because I'd never seen a white buffalo. I didn't know what the significance of it was. And so I told him as soon as he got there, I seen him coming over the hill on that high hill, and he sat down, and I'm blurting it out. "I seen a white buffalo in my dream. I want to know what it is," and so he just sit there. he wanted me to calm down. And so he told me the story about that prophecy about the white buffalo. And so I said, why am I dreaming of the white buffalo? And he said, because you are going to go and teach the young people. And so I fasted. In our culture, we fast 4 times in our lifetime. We're supposed to fast from 0 to 13 years, 14 to 26, 27 to 39, and 40 to 52 are the times that we normally fast. I went on 4 of those fasts. Each time I fasted, I had that dream of the white buffalo. The first time I dreamed of the white buffalo, he was on his knees, sitting on his knees. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, that's where you are. You're just learning about our spirituality and our culture and these teachings, and you're on your knees. Second time, it was standing. He said, that's where you are. You're standing with these teachings. And the third time, it was walking. And he says, that's where you are. You're walking with these teachings now. And so when I went on the fourth fast, I knew I was going to have a dream about a white buffalo, but I didn't know what was going to come. And so in the dream on the third day on that fourth fast, the buffalo ran across in front of me in my dream from the east to the west. And so when the elder came, he says, he looks at me and he says, you had a dream, right? And I said, yeah, but I'm not running. I'm not going to run like the buffalo did. And so he said, that's not what that means. He says, what it means is it's time for you to take the teachings that you have learned and to share those with the young people and to pass those teachings on. And so working in a jail system, in the provincial jail system, it was the perfect place to do teachings because you have a captive audience. They're not going to go anywhere. And so what I did was I developed a program in Sudbury Jail. That's the initial jail that I started with. And I started to have this medicine wheel and these teachings. And we'd come in and do teachings. We had elders that come in and did the teachings also. So the animal that sits in the north is the bear. The bear protects all the medicines that grow in the wild. It's also the protector of our medicine people. We have medicine people that are knowledgeable about the plant life, the water life, and the root life, and they can make remedies to help people with different illnesses. And so they're very special people in our culture and in our communities. So those are the four animals that sit in the four directions. And now I want to talk to you about the five rascals. The five rascals are five negative feelings and emotions that all people have. Doesn't matter what race you come from, what mixture of races you come from, whether you're a child, whether you're a teenager, whether you're an adult, or whether you're an elder, you experience these teachings at some point in your life. The first one in the East is inferiority. Inferiority is when you feel you're not as good as the next person. My first experience is that when I went into grade one, I was the only Native kid in grade one in the school that I went to. We had a federal school that on our First Nation, but I didn't get to go to that. My mother sent me to the public school because she knew that the federal school was going to close down in December, so she didn't want me to interrupt my school. But not really knowing that the torture that she put me through when I had to go to the regular school. I got picked on, I got beat up, I got called all kinds of names. And after you get called those things enough times, you start to think that you're not as good as the next person. And so that was my first experience of inferiority. In the South is envy. Envy is when you want something, but you don't want to work to get it. You want it handed to you. And a lot of times this is where bullies come from. Bullies are male or female who pick on people who are weaker than them. And a lot of times what a bully will do is he'll recruit people to do the dirty work for him. So it's a negative feeling and emotion. The one in the West is resentment. Resentment is a reaction to something that somebody says or does to you. Usually you react in hurt or pain, or you want to get even. Anytime anybody called me a drunken Indian, the first thing I would do was lash out in aggression and anger because of what that person said to me. And usually it was me that got in trouble, not the person that calls you a name. They're not the ones that get in trouble, because usually what a person does when they call you a name, first thing they do is they step back because they want to see how you're going to react. If you cry, they're going to pick on you even more. If you lash out and be forceful, they're going to stay away from you. But it's a negative feeling emotion, because any time that I did that, I ended up in trouble. The one that sits in the north is uncaring. Uncaring is when you don't care for yourself, you don't care for anybody else around you. My most uncaring time was the 7 years that I used alcohol, because I didn't care if my children had food, clothing, shelter, anything. The only thing I cared about was where I was going to get my next drink. Most uncaring time. I taught my children the effects of alcohol. My children wanted to be away from me. They stayed away from me. They went through the doors and they stood and looked through the windows at me, because they used to tell me, "I don't like you, Dad, when you drink. I don't like this. I don't like that." And I would never listen to them, because that's how powerful the addiction of alcohol is. And so for me, that was my most uncaring time. So my children grew up. They had their own addictions. And I had sobered up, but my children had addictions. And then I had to get somebody else to help my children, because as a father, you probably know that your children, your father or mother, you're the last ones they're going to listen to. So I had to get somebody else to talk to them and get help for them. And so today my son is alcohol and drug free also. My daughter is still struggling a little bit. Mainly more, she is cleaner than she was than using. So I'm very fortunate. Now, I wasn't a very good dad, and I told you that. But what has happened now, and this is part of the healing process, is God has given me a second chance, because my children have given me 8 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. So now I get to teach them about our spirituality and our culture and about addiction, so maybe they don't have to go through some of the things that we went through. They don't have to go through residential school. They don't have to go through all of that stuff. And so I'm very grateful today for the opportunity that God has given me to have these grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Where was I? Resentment, uncaring. In the very center is jealousy. Jealousy is the strongest of those negative feelings and emotions. And people get jealous of what other people have, material-wise, academically-wise, everything. People are jealous of each other, of what they have, what you have and what they don't have. And so these 5 negative feelings and emotions, I call them 5 rascals: inferiority, envy, resentment, uncaring, and jealousy. And a lot of times what happens is when you have those five negative feelings and emotions, as you go through life, if you don't deal with them, they get heavier and heavier and heavier. I used alcohol in order to numb the hurt and pain and from the trauma and everything that I went through. And so they got so heavy that I couldn't stand up straight. I wouldn't look people in the eye. And I thought nobody cared for me and nobody loved me, and I didn't think there was any hope. And so I let those five negative feelings and emotions control me. And I used alcohol to numb the pain. But like I told you, you do not have to be an alcoholic or a drug addict in order to suffer from these negative feelings and emotions. And they can plague you. So when I decided that it was time to change, I needed help. And I had to ask for help. When I was at that treatment center, the counselor said to me, "You have to phone somebody and tell them you're here." I said, "What alcoholic wants to let anybody know that they're in a treatment center?" And so I skipped the first day having to do that. Then the second day he asked me again. So I picked up the phone and I called my mother. And it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I said, "Hello, Mom." And she said, first words come out of her mouth, "What's wrong?" And I said, "No, hello," you know. And she said, "I'm used to hearing you anywhere from 1 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock in the morning, usually so drunk that I can't understand what you're saying, but I keep you on the phone because at least I know you're alive." And so I said, "Oh." And she says, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm at a treatment center. I'm trying to get help for myself." And she said, "I'll pray for you." And so I hung up the phone and I carried on doing what I was doing. And then after the treatment, I lived in a city called Timmins. And I lived there for 4 months, and then I moved back home to the reserve. And so I was around my family again, and I was around people that I knew. And my mother had a way of keeping me out of trouble. And she says, "You can drive me to bingo." Mother played bingo a couple nights a week. And so I would drive her, and then she'd say, "Well, you might as well come in." You know, I'd come in and I'd go in. And so after a while, all her friends that were sitting at the table was watching my cards. So I'd just get up and walk away because they're watching them anyway. So. But fortunately, 5 years, they had a 5-year celebration of being alcohol free. And so my sponsor at the time asked if anybody wanted to speak. So my mom said, "Yeah, I'll speak." And I'm thinking, oh, 5 years, she's going to hammer me now. But she got up and she said, I remember the day he called at 3 o'clock, and I told him that I'm used to hearing him. And she said, "I told him I would pray for him." She said, "I prayed to God every day that he never drank again." And she said, "I even told God that I wouldn't drink for every day that he didn't drink." So her sobriety date and my sobriety date is the same day. I lost my mother in 2000. I promised her but I wouldn't drink again. So that's my journey, part of my journey, is to live the rest of my life on Mother Earth, alcohol and drug free, and to do this work. So those negative feelings and emotions, if you allow them, they can pull your life down. You can even reach a point where you might even consider hurting yourself. And once I realized those negative things control my life, then I had to look at, okay, how do I let those go? How am I going to heal from those things? And so the elders introduced me to the seven grandfather teachings, which are on the next page. These seven grandfather teachings are things that I had to learn to put in practice every day. The first one is wisdom. Wisdom is to cherish knowledge. Every day that we're on Mother Earth, we learn. We learn something, and we need to cherish that knowledge that we learn. The next one is love. I had to learn again what love was. I had to learn that I was a good person. I learned quickly, even though I was not a good alcoholic, a good person when I drank, I became a good person from the first day that I stopped using alcohol and abusing myself. So every day I give thanks to the Creator that I've been able to leave alcohol alone, and I learn how to love myself, and then I learn how to love everything else around me on Mother Earth. The next one is bravery. Bravery is to face those negative feelings and emotions, that inferiority, envy, resentment, uncaring, and jealousy. I had to learn how to face that. Look in the mirror at myself and say, I suffer from those. The next seven grandfather teaching is honesty, and this was the hardest one for me. Because when I drank, I was a liar, a cheat, a con, and a thief. I used to tell stories so people would be around me all the time. And the story around honesty is when you're honest, you don't have to remember what you say because you're being honest. But if you tell a lie, you have to remember what that lie is, because if you tell that story again, somebody's going to trip you up and say, hey, you changed that story. So it's better to be honest than it is to tell a lie. The next one is humility. Humility is to understand it's just part of, a small part of creation. Each and every one of us here that are in this church today, we're all unique, we're all different. We have gifts that have been given to us by our mother, our father, and God. What you need to do is find out what your gifts are and what you're good at, and share those with other people that don't have the same gifts. But you also must remember, you're only a small part of creation. But each and every one of you are just as important as anybody else. That's what humility is. The next one is truth. After learning what honesty was, this being honest and not lying, I had to learn how to speak the truth at all times. And the last one is respect. I had to learn about respect. Respect myself, respect creation, and to respect women. In our culture, the women are the givers of life. They are the ones that have the babies. They are the teachers. Men are the providers and the protector of the women and children. And so men have to learn how to respect the women. And that's the way it was taught in our culture. And somewhere along the line, as a result of residential school or whatever else happened to our people, we stopped following those teachings. So now it's time to bring those teachings back. I want to tell you about these seven grandfather teachings. These are positive things that we put in our life every day, and we practice them every day. So what happened was I was able to let go of the anger, hurt, and pain that I carried, and that plagued me. And I started to learn about the seven grandfather teachings. So I went out from being crooked to practicing those seven grandfather teachings, let go of the negative feelings, emotions, trauma, everything that I held. And as I did that and learned about those teachings and learned those seven grandfathers and lived them every day, I came up to be standing straight up and down. All I do is balance myself today. The negative things are still there. Inferiority, envy, resentment, uncaring, and jealousy, they're still there. It's just that I don't pick them up today the way I used to. I have choices. We all have choices. You have choices whether you want to be negative or positive. You make that choice. Even as young children, they have choices. Today, I get to choose to live by the teachings. Letting go of the anger, hurt, and pain, and everything that I held, I became a more kind and caring person. As I say, I worked in the jails. I worked in the jails for 23, 24 years as a native liaison, helping in the different institutions. During the time that I was doing this work inside the jails, I happened to attend parole hearings in which I would see the parole board sitting behind a desk as a figure of authority. They would ask questions to the indigenous clients, and the clients usually gave one-word answers, and then they would rubber stamp and say, denied. And so I said, there's got to be a better way to do this in order for our people to have a voice and to be able to speak. And so I negotiated for 2 years with the Ontario Parole Board, and we developed and came together to do Indigenous Circle hearings, where the circle is run by the elders. And the elder does the opening ceremony and also consults with the offender to get him, explain the circle to him and be able to talk to him about his life. And that individual will talk about their life history from when they were a little kid right up to the day that they had the parole hearing. And so the parole board hears those stories and then makes a decision as to whether they're going to be granted parole or not. The first year we did it was 2005, and we had 18 parole hearings that year. We had 12 that were successful and made parole. We had 6 that didn't make parole. And the six that didn't make it was because they weren't prepared. They didn't have support mechanisms in place in the community. And so this past year, we've started working full-time with the Ontario Parole Board. I have 4 elders that work with me doing the parole hearings. And Donna, my partner sitting in the front there, she is one of them that does the circle hearings with the female inmates and male inmates. And so this year, this past year, we did over 200 circle hearings. And so it's reached a point where the parole board would wishing that they were all circle hearings and they didn't have to have the regular hearings. So I've always been a strong advocate for Indigenous people who are incarcerated or homeless or needing treatment. And so sometimes People don't like what you say because you're telling the truth. And sometimes they struggle with the truth. And so I have stopped working in the institutions as native liaisons. At one point I had 5 contracts, and now I only do the Ontario Parole Board. And but I'm okay with that because besides that, I work in the Catholic School Board in Sudbury. I teach classes, these medicine wheel teachings with the youth, and I've been doing that now since 2005, too, I think. I've been involved in a lot to bring the teachings back, bring the ceremonies back. Yesterday, I don't know if it was raining here, but in our territory where I come from, it rained for 2 days straight, and it was so wet and soggy, and we put up a sweat lodge to do a sweat lodge ceremony, and there was about 8 people that came together, had to work together collectively to put that sweat lodge up, and we had a sweat lodge ceremony. It's a healing ceremony for our people and for any people. The teachings that I share with you, the teacher that I had, he taught me that these teachings are indigenous teachings, but they are meant for the yellow race, the red race, the black race, and the white race. They're not only meant for native people. He said they're meant for everybody so that they can help heal. And so any time that I'm asked, I do that work to help people heal. And I'm very grateful to have been asked to come here and to share what little bit I know. Nobody's cut me off yet. I think that's why they took that other thing away from me, because the guy was going to shit the button so I could stop teaching. But normally this would take 4 or 6 hours to do what I've done in a short period of time. But I'm just grateful that I was asked to come here. And grateful that this part, because of the teachings, I was taught by our teachers, my teachers, never to look for recognition, never look for a pat on the back or nothing like that. Eh? And so in 2010, I was awarded the Award of Excellence for Aboriginal Programs, Contribution to Corrections for the Development and Implementation of Aboriginal Programs in the Institutions. And I said, I can't accept it because that's not our way. And then a young lady came, and she said, was a client that I had worked with, and she said, that award isn't about you, it's about us, all the people that you've helped in doing the work that you've been doing. So I this girl came from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, got on a bus, had a dream about me, got on a bus, came across Canada on a bus, got off in Sudbury, and talked to me and told me, you're troubled about something. And so after I said I would go and get it, she got back on the bus and went back to Saskatoon. Never even stayed overnight. Got back on the midnight bus and went back. And so in 2013, I was nominated for the Order of Ontario. And I didn't hesitate. I said, I'll go and I'll accept it for the people. Then in 2016, I was awarded the Civilian Meritorious Service Award by the Governor General of Canada for Indigenous programs, working with our people. And so what those awards have brought for me is credibility that I'm doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing. And people question you. People are always going to question you. I was told by an elder, I wanted to go back to school one time because somebody had questioned the teachings that I was giving. Who gave you those teachings, and what gives you the right to teach them? So I thought, I didn't have no letters behind my name. And so I was going to go back to college or university for a four-year Indigenous studies course. So I went there and I talked to the professor and I gave him tobacco and he said, "What's going on?" So I told him, I said, "Somebody questioned my credibility, so I'm going to take this four-year Indigenous course. I'm going to pass it, and then I'm going to have these letters behind my name." And I said, "Then nobody will ever be able to question me again." And he said, he looked at me, and he spun his chair around, and he threw this big binder in front of me, and he says, "This is the course outline. I want you to go through it." So I flipped the pages a couple of times, and he said, "You could teach this." And I said, "Yeah, probably." And he says, "So why do you want to waste 4 years of your life? You already have the teaching, you already have the work that you put into it for 35 years, so why go back to school?" So I said, "Okay." So I went back to work. I was all disappointed because I thought I was going to get to go to school for 4 years. You don't have to work as hard. But, Donna is here with me. And originally I had told her that Karen had sent me an email, and she says, "Well, Don will speak on the parole hearing, you see?" And so she's not really one to, she doesn't like getting up in front of people. But anyways, the real reason why Donna is here, in our culture, we have male and female. Male and female for balance. And so she comes here to give me balance, to be able to do what I'm doing. And I'm there for her to give her balance. When I'm out of balance, usually she takes me to the water, because the water is the place that helps us heal. So I'm probably over, right?
Thank you, Vince. That was truly remarkable, and thank you for sharing with us today, and thank you, Donna, for being here as well. We will stand and sing together verse 4, "To Touch the Earth Lightly."